Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 2nd, 2000. In the fireside room this afternoon, we have Tom Fox. Today's session number is HFT 2008 and is titled Conflict Resolution, Communication, and Management, Conflict Styles Inventory. Let's listen in.
I'll start out with the abbreviated version because I'm going to have to pull you kind of up to date, and it's going to be fast. So I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the Universal Experience. It's a tape we have in the tape library, Triggers, and Homeostasis, those three, because you're not going to get the full gist of, the session's going to be useful for you, but we're going to be using some words which you're going to be unaccustomed to, so I'm going to go through real quickly. Very quickly, my name is Tom Fuchs. I work at a conflict resolution center at the University of North Dakota. I have a master's degree in training, adult education and training, from Seattle University. I lived at Holden for 2 years as staff coordinator. I lived at Lutheran Bible Institute, a biblically centered college in Seattle, for 5 years. I now live in northern Minnesota, the coldest spot on the earth. I'm really excited about it. A couple things I want to say to the people who aren't here is that we look at conflict completely different than you probably have ever thought about conflict. We think about conflict in the context of no one ever feels powerful in conflict. And as many times as we've done exercises over and over again, we never find that person who said, yeah, felt good, felt great. So we believe there are some universal elements to conflict. One, you never feel powerful. You always feel weak, and not, I don't mean physically, but like you can't find the right words to say, and it gets really confusing. The second piece is that you become very suspicious of the other person. So it is a universal experience for us to think of the other person as group. What other words we came up with? Self-righteous butthead. Prick. What was another one?
Butthead.
Idiot. Jerk. So we automatically become very suspicious of the other person. And it's universal. It happens to 3-year-olds. It happens to 70-year-olds, 90-year-olds. It happens to everybody. And it happens across cultures, too. So that is, those concepts we're going to talk about is empowerment and recognition. And we began to think about why that happens. Why does it happen that when we most want to access all of the conflict resolution skills we have, they're out the window. And we came up with two ideas. One idea is fairly consistent with the medical stuff, which is that when we get into conflict, our body starts to respond to it. And that is an adaptive response using our amygdala. And our amygdala fires, and it basically kind of shuts us down, and it gets ready for us to either fight or run away, fight or flight. But that's not the only reason why we would lose those words. We also have an identity that we carry with ourselves. We call it a homeostasis. That homeostasis is all of the words we want to be known as. And what are the words? One at a time, what are some of the words we have in our homeostasis?
Kind.
Loving.
Intelligent.
Competent. Compassionate. What?
Calm.
Respectful. What?
Calm.
Fun. Gentle. Loving. All of those things. And that's what makes up our homeostasis. And the minute we begin to be suspicious and think of each other as, or the other person as a butthead and a self-righteous prick, we have a hard time understanding ourselves as compassionate and sensitive. So we get kind of pulled out of the people we want to be. The model we use is called homeostasis. And it's a pretty simple model that says that we all live in a continuum between peace and conflict. And on that continuum, we live in that homeostasis. And that homeostasis contains all of those words that we talk about. And it contains our identity. It contains sort of our mission in life. It contains our religious beliefs. It contains all of the components that we call ourselves. And the minute we get taken out of, we get into conflict, we fall out of our homeostasis. Within our homeostasis, we can handle ordinary conflicts. we can handle things that come up and, you know, for the most part are just simple things that go on. But when something surprises us or triggers us, and that's what we worked on yesterday, there are certain things that just kind of pull us right out of our homeostasis. And we came up with some great ones yesterday. What were some of the ones you came up with that, what are some of the triggers that pull you out of your homeostasis?
Anybody remember? You should, you need.
Yes, people who should on you. Very much should on you. And when they should on you, that it's like you should be doing this when you don't quite know why or there isn't a good explanation. Shoulding is one of the things that triggers people into conflict. Another one. What was another one that?
Telling people or being told about faults that you are going to be back.
Yes. When someone tells you about the faults you already know you have. And you just, you get kind of like, oh, I know that I knew that. And you get kind of twitchy, you know? The twitchy part is still right on the edge. When you really go out is when you get into conflict. And the further you go out, the harder it is for you to come up with the words that you want to say. And so you begin to stammer and stutter and not respond the way you'd like to because, and I want to tell everybody in this room, and I preach it, there is, it, when it happens, I don't care how good of a conflict resolver you've become, and even knowing this ability doesn't change it. If you get into a kind of a fundamental experience, you will get that feeling, you know, that feeling like, oh my gosh, somebody's kind of just jumped on me for no apparent reason, and I'm feeling a little bit out of my homeostasis. So it happens. We believe that empowerment and recognition are the words that bring us back into our homeostasis. The best example I can use is when you get into a fight with your spouse, and you're fighting and you're fighting and fighting, and all of a sudden somebody sort of throws out that first little peace offering. And you kind of begin to build on it. And not only do you understand your own situation, but you also recognize the other person. You recognize that they have some valid points. You recognize that it isn't just about you, but it's about you together. So that is the kind of the down and dirty of the concepts that we've covered so far. Did I forget anything, group? Does any important other concepts that I'm missing? I think those are it. Empowerment and recognition are so important. And empowerment and recognition are, it's an amazing thing that happens. Because you can't have empowerment and recognition. In other words, you can't recognize the other person and what their needs and responsibilities are until you have some awareness of your own. So that old adage about never go to bed angry, you remember that? That's kind of an adage for marriages. Kind of like one of those. In many ways, it's not true. But the problem is that if you do go to bed angry, by the next morning you wake up, your homeostasis has been reestablished. And then you don't really want to go back there and have a conversation because your homeostasis is just, you've sort of worked it through and through over in your head, and it's just not nice. It's not fun to go back to that place and to talk about that. And so we believe that's why that's an old adage, because if you don't go back there, then that homeostasis has the potential of reestablishing. Once in a while, though, you get into a fight with someone, and after it's over, or an argument or a conflict, and after it's over, it's like, that felt good, you know? You know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like, yeah, we really needed to do this. We cleared the air. We've got some issues out. I understand their perspective. They understand mine. We call that moral growth, and that's when your homeostasis comes out, and it's a little bit higher and a little bit better. Now, once again, a fairly simplistic model, a very simplistic model for a pretty complex component of what we're talking about. This isn't the only thing that's at work. And today we're going to talk about conflict styles, because we all have a certain style at which we like to address issues. And that style comes from a lot of different places, but mainly it comes from your environment as a child. Not necessarily your parents, but your environment as a child. There are different contexts. You know, we hear about East Coast, at least in the Midwest, they talk about East Coast kind of abruptness. I talked with a young woman from Germany today, and she said in Germany, people are much more willing to say, this is how it is, and they're much more able to argue and then walk away. The experience isn't any different, okay? This is always at work, but your style of handling it is different. And what we're going to work today on is having you look at what your style is, and we're going to take a little test in just a few minutes on your style. Once you get into a homeostasis experience, you're not going to have a lot of choices. You're going to feel the same way, but you may from this test be able to recognize a little bit about your preferred style of handling conflict. There is no validity to this test. Okay? I want to say that right off. No validity at all. Because it's how you answer it. Okay? And it has a Likert scale, in other words, a 1 through 5 scale. And it's all about how you're feeling at the moment. And it's about how much relative conflict you have in your life, too. If there's a lot of conflict, you may answer these questions differently. But what we think it does is it gives people a sense about who they are and what they do. I do have pens and pencils for people today. I did borrow them out of the office, so please let's remember to bring them back after we're done. I'm going to send some up to the top. I should have enough copies. How many people are up there? Are there questions or comments about what goes on? It's only going to take you about 5 minutes to do this. Do you have some extras up there?
Yeah.
You want to reach up and grab the ones up there? Yeah? Oh. We have copies up there yet? How many copies are left? Oh, let's go. Okay, what are we short here? 1, 2. We're pretty close. I think we're gonna make it. By the grace of God. Does everybody have a copy? Is there any copies left over?
There's one copy.
There's one left over. Cool. All right. I would just like you to take some time to do this, and it's you're kind of answering things like, is it easier to refrain than retreat from a quarrel? And then it's 5 is the way I typically act in a conflict. 4, 3, 2, 1. One is.
That one already.
What's that?
What's the difference between refraining and retreating?
Yes.
Yeah.
Refrain would be that I don't get into it. Retreat would be once I get into it, I back out.
Gotcha.
Okay. Some of them are rather confusing, but read them closely. And then I want you to just go to the second page after you're done and score them. But don't turn there yet. Scoring is really easy. It runs from left to right. 1 through 3, 4, 5, and then we'll take the test and we'll come back in just a couple minutes. So go ahead and score your sheets. I apologize to those people who came late that I don't have any more copies. Unfortunately, I handed them all out, so once they've written on them. But I'll ask, I know Dave Sponheim, who's going to be teaching some classes later this week, has taken this before, and he might give me his copy, and I'll white him out for people who are interested in taking copies. Looks like most of you are done. Most of you are done. I'm going to start talking about them. Probably what happened was that you have two or three that are pretty close. One that's probably quite a ways away. Pretty consistently it happens because we all use different kinds of styles when we're working through issues. Once again, I want to remind you, if you come out of your homeostasis, your ability to choose one is absolutely zero. Okay. You will probably go to the turtle or the shark. I mean, those are some of the two common things you do. Sometimes you go to the teddy bear. These two, the fox and the owl, are the ones that kind of are the, let's reach some kind of compromise, and we'll talk about that. I want to tell you about my life. I work with a woman who calls herself a recovering shark. She's from a very, very successful family. Her father developed a chain of tire stores and is now a multimillionaire and, you know, really a highly competitive family, very involved in everything. And her family was always about, are you winning? Can you win? So, for the most part, she responds in a certain way, like a fox or an owl, most of the time, in a collaborative manner. But whenever kind of the crunch time comes, she comes out chewing. Okay. And she does a lot of like, this is a woman I work with daily, and she and I team teach together quite a bit, and she goes into a training and it's like, you know, if she would have been here, we would have had more than enough handouts. Because it's about goals and objectives and always covering your butt. I mean, that's what she's about. She knows what to do. She knows how to do it. She knows where to do it. And I show up at training and I'm like, here we are. Let's get going. Where are the handouts? Because I trust and I know her skills and her abilities. And that's what we do when we link up with people. We trust and we get to know who they are. And so we sort of work off them. And for the most part, she does a great job. And if something isn't going right, you guys are learning. And if something goes wrong, like a training goes south, you know, goes bad on us, well, this happened to us when we were doing med school students who are very strong on sciences and everything else and want to know the facts and, you know, we had them in this training and it just wasn't going well. It was in a nasty room, long and narrow, about 40 people in the room, and it just was a poor setup. And so it started going bad. And so she was like, goals, goals, goals. And I'm like, I'm a teddy bear for the most part. And I'm like, da 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 da. I'm like, if they aren't going to learn anything, there's no use pounding this stuff into them. Let's just have fun. They'll remember having a good time. So we really clash at that opportunity because she was like, move into the goals and get the hard skills and everything else. And I'm like, oh, who cares? Let's tell a joke, you know? So do you see how that can sort of work? People who are sharks have a strong orientation to goals. And sometimes at the risk of relationships. They tend to be standard bearers. They're the ones that say, this is the bar. And we're going to set the bar at this height, you know, because that's where we need to do it. So they're needed in organizations, but sometimes they have a risk of losing relationships. I am a teddy bear because my father is a shark. Okay? I come home, I'm 41 years old. And he still believes I'm 17 years old. I just can't believe it. And I'll come home and he'll do things like, come on, we're gonna cut down some trees. I'm like, Dad, and I'm here for the weekend. Come on, get in the truck. I get out there and he's like, he ties a rope around me. Climb up that tree. Dad, I'm 41 years old. I'm bald, you know, there's a lot of young kids around here. Get up the damn tree, you know? So it's all about goals. He's not really concerned about his relationship with me. He wants the tree down. Unfortunately, he's not concerned whether I'm in the tree or down beside him. And in fact, we'll do things like one time I was up in the tree and he started cutting on it. You know. So that's the sort of style that I grew up with. That makes sense?
Timber.
It's Comber. So he's a shark, you know? And as a shark, we tend to either adopt kind of what was the model in our household, or we reject it pretty strongly. And I pretty strongly rejected it. Now, most of the time, I can work in the fox and owl, but when push comes to shove, I sort of go towards a relationship, and I always think about, what's the message? What do we need to learn? What do I need to learn? What does the other person need to learn? And that's my orientation when I get into conflict, is that I tend to go there. Sometimes I'll go into the turtle, though. I mean, I just won't. You know, if I get pushed hard enough by my father, for instance, I'll just tell him to F off. Because, you know, I'm at that point where I know that he wants a relationship with me, and so I sort of have to work with him on that. But sometimes I'll just withdraw. You know, turtles sort of back off. And if you live with a shark, either you become a turtle, a teddy bear, or a shark. I mean, those tend to be your dominants. One of the things that I don't agree with this whole conflict styles is it says, you know, when to use this style. I'm not sure that I take a lot of time trying to decide which style. Am I going to be a fox today or an owl, you know? I don't think we do that. I think it's a pretty natural response. And that's why I think you all have two or three that are probably your core ones. My core ones are fox, owl, teddy bear, and then probably turtle, and then probably shark. Yes?
One example, when you use it, though, would be like if somebody cuts you off with road rage, you probably want to be a turtle and not have your shark tendencies. You want to realize that devils are present in all of us and not...
That's right.
Kind of. Or if you're going to buy a car and your natural tendency is to be a turtle or a teddy bear, you may want to be a shark. Because they're going to be shark.
How many people enjoy buying a car? A couple do. Yeah, sometimes people do. You like that
kind of.
No,
I go through a broker.
Oh, you go through a broker. Yeah. Let someone else do the haggling. Huh? So yeah, there's a. You're right. So you sometimes can choose. Sometimes. And we want you to think about it because it's an important thing when you're doing that. So the shark, strong goals at the risk of relationship. Turtles are the avoiders. They tend to sort of go back. Teddy bears have traditionally been more women than men in teddy bears. Teddy bears have a strong sense of relationships. They really care about it, and they sometimes they lose their goals in order to maintain the relationship. Okay, they want to kind of keep the family together, keep the work group together, keep you know. Teddy bears love to sing Kumbaya. They do. Or it only takes a spark. Foxes. Foxes are compromisers. They bargain. They're the ones who sort of say, there's a limited resource here. I know I'm not going to get all that I want, and I know that you're not going to get all you want. Let's find the middle ground. They traditional union negotiation, you know, wherever I start my bargaining position from, the more I can get out of it. Did anybody listen to in Minneapolis there was this big hotel workers strike that came up this summer, right as they were going to get a 50,000 person Alcoholics Anonymous conference coming to Minneapolis. Okay, and the union did this really kind of fox behavior. They began to strike one hotel at a time. And they started like 10 days before this huge conference. And then they also said, we want this outrageous amount of money. It was like 70 cents an hour per person raise for the lowest level of workers. So their demands were really high. And they simply just kept on cranking up the whole sort of machine in order to get what they needed to get done. And guess what? A day or 2 days before the conference, they settled. Now, they didn't settle for the 75 cents, but their position that they started from gave them more than if they had they started with a reasonable position. So foxes sometimes think about that and say, well, what do I really want out of this? Where do I need to start? Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There is a position. So what it is they have a position between A and B. A and B. Now, they both determine the A and B position by their positions, and they're going to meet somewhere in the middle, or they're going to meet somewhere between this. And depending on who has the hand, you know, who's got the best hand to play, will determine what the decision is. Okay. Not always equitable. You know, had the union not done that as they did it in Minneapolis with the hotel workers, had they tried to strike in February, it wouldn't have been as successful. So they were choosing to do it that way. Compromising is are the owls. How many owls do we have in the room? Kind of, yeah. Yeah, all is that sort of that win-win, isn't it? It says, let's find out what's important. Let's figure out what's really important here and try to understand each other. It really is sort of the win-win. And that's become kind of jargon in our culture, win-win. But it says, there's a position A, there's a position B, but there's a bunch of A's, and there's a bunch of B's. And let's figure out where in here can we have some sort of compromise. In other words, what are my interests? What am I trying to figure out? What am I trying to do from this situation? What are my goals? What are the relationships I need to maintain? And they try to figure it all out before they go into it. Sometimes in best case scenarios, when an estate is being settled for a family, and the people in the estate say, you know, we are really going to come together and sort of set some prices arbitrarily, and then we're going to allow people to choose from it from our family, and what's left over will sell at an auction. And so what they've done is they've taken a neutral person in, and they price things out, and then they gather people together, and they take bids. Not without its fights, not without its concerns, but more equitable than someone who's in charge of and is going to be a fox and says, if you want it, you buy it on the auction block. And you bid against everybody else that also wants grandma's antique dresser. Make sense what I'm talking about? It's about compromising, about coming together. It's about saying, you know, how can we raise the commitment level? How can we trust each other more to come up with an equitable solution? Sometimes what happens is with the owl is this owl and fox sometimes gets to be confusing because we have a hard time differentiating compromise from collaboration. Compromise from collaboration. And we sort of believe that they're both the same, and in many ways, they really aren't. Sometimes we get a passive-aggressive behavior going between teddy bear and sharks. And this happens, it happens pretty honestly, but what happens is that we get into environments where we believe that we are called to be a teddy bear, or we're called to be a shark. Let's say we're called to be a teddy bear. And we think, yes, let's say an office project, and somebody wants to do the project a certain way. And so we think in our heart of hearts, fine, there's a better way of doing this, and I'll do it my way next time. But we never tell the other person that that's the way it's going to be. We simply say in our heart of hearts, okay, next time is my way. And then the next time comes along and the person gets ready to do the project and it's just like, boom, we jump on them because it was our, you know, our, and we fail to sort of keep that other person notified. And that is passive because we're sort of a shark in teddy bear clothing. Make sense? Happens in organizations, doesn't it? Happens in, sometimes it happens with your spouse. That teddy bear shark. Questions about what this is about, or yeah.
Well, it would seem to me, you know, as you're answering these questions, you're saying, all right, there's a conflict and it's existing and I need to deal with it. So I'm thinking about it and I'm planning how I'm going to deal with this conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So we can all be real rational in
exactly.
how we answer those questions as we're thinking about the conflict. But most of the conflicts that many of the conflicts that happen in our lives are not those deliberate, I need to deal with this, how am I going to deal with it type. They're the, you know, your target store incident
right.
or whatever. I mean,
absolutely.
They're those instantaneous ones where you're just you get out of your...
Right.
and then what's interesting to me is, I think that if I'm caught off guard and I get out of my homeostasis, I probably turn into a shark. I would guess I do. Those of you who know me. But I had a very low score as a shark.
Right.
Because if I have a chance to think about it, that's not how I'm doing.
That's an excellent point, yes. If you think about it, you wouldn't do it. And within your homeostasis, you probably are choosing all sorts of different ways to do it. It's the normal little run-of-the-mill conflicts. How should we do this? Where you're not really vested that much. But if you're surprised or if you're triggered, you might turn into a shark. Yeah. The woman I work with scores very low on the shark score. She scores very low because, for one thing, not many people want to self-identify as a shark.
Some of us are honest, though.
Some of us are honest, and some of us... So, does that trigger you or what? Or is it triggering you or is it triggering me? No, some people, yeah, sometimes you can be more honest with yourselves. Sometimes if you're in a conflict that is fairly fresh and new, you may respond to this. And that's why I say this test has no validity. Because it doesn't. You know, if you had a fight this morning with someone, you're going to answer these differently than if you're, and like you say, if you're sitting here and you're being rational. I don't believe that any real conflict, I mean, I'm talking conflict where you get triggered, is a rational conflict. We used to train conflict resolution, and we used to train utilizing a model. And they use models in schools, and... you know, there's good reasons why they use models, but the unfortunate piece is the model makes a lot of sense when you're sitting here about it, and you can think, you know, one of them is a stop model. Dave, do you remember what stop is? Is it stop, think, options, and plan? And kids, they use that quite extensively. Stop, think, options, plan. So when they get into conflict, they have a little area they go to and they take that other child over there and they try to work it out between them using those steps. Now, yeah, I think it's helpful, but oftentimes, if we come out of our homeostasis, you know, stopping is the hardest part, you know. Thinking, come on, you know, your brain is turned off. Options, you don't have empowerment and recognition, can you think of options? You know, if you don't have any empowerment, if you don't understand your own position, can you take and provide options? So, which is why our center has moved away. We do not utilize a step model of dealing with conflict. We simply talk about how do you foster empowerment and recognition. So we utilize empowerment and recognition to get or to encourage people to develop their own empowerment recognition. And once that begins to happen, then the conflict, they work the conflict out themselves. We become less of a party to the conflict. And if you've done any work with conflict organizations, conflict resolution organizations, what has happened is that conflict resolution organizations love to come in and sort of interview this person and interview that person, and you know, 3 months later they're still trying to figure out what to do. Well, the reality is that as soon as it happens, you need to get the people together and to build empowerment and recognition and let them work it out. The rest of it will happen, you know, but I guarantee you get 11 people in a room, you're going to have 11 different ideas. Is that the carol?
Is that from you?
It looked like
you were sounding. That's right. So yeah, very good point. Very good point. I believe that we do.
But it's also those situations, like especially in marriage, where you'll go ahead and put this sort of thing off for a while.
Oh yeah.
And you finally say, we're going to sit down now. And so some of this stuff can go into play, I would think, better. Because you kind of know where you're trying to go, or whatever your style is, or what your goal is, what your position is going to be. So it's not always just when the guy cuts you off in traffic. Sometimes it's, more planned confrontation.
And you weren't here last week, but 85% of all men in marriages are the stonewallers. Men stonewall conflict much more than women do. And it's a biological function. At least this is the point that Gottman makes. John Gottman's The Seven Principles of Making Marriage Work. He says that men get flooded. Men come out of their homeostasis easier than women do. And once men get out of their homeostasis, men have a harder time getting back into their homeostasis. And mostly, he says it's a physiological response to an adaptive piece of us. In other words, men were called upon to be the person who protected the family, whatever that unit was, clan, whatever. And that we, when we get flooded, when our amygdala fires, we have a harder time relaxing, getting back into it. And when we're encouraged to seek revenge, we much more easily go back there than do women. And the reason was that women needed to nurse children. And children are very intuitive, and as anybody who's ever nursed kids or even dads who've watched it, when mom is upset, the baby doesn't nurse. And so what the hypothesis is that women created, it's an adaptive feature of our person, of our people, that women would. So men don't want to go there. We don't. And does any men disagree with me in the room? I don't want to go there.
Isn't it also because male interactions can be much more physical?
Mm-hmm.
And you're much more in danger physical reactions that you have. I mean, I remember, this is classical, women in traffic, they'll flip off somebody.
Right.
And I had to explain, you know, that could cause a real strong physical response, and I'm not sure women realize it as much as men do.
Right. But particularly if they flipped off a man, you mean?
Well, just the act, I mean.
Yeah.
Men start fighting or something like that.
Right. Yeah, road rage is a strange phenomenon, and it's mostly a U.S. phenomenon. So does that make sense that men are more stonewallers? So, and your point was that sometimes you get to choose these things when you're sitting down with a person and you're thinking about what are my goals, how important is my relationship and my goals? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. At least going into it.
Yeah. Exactly. I think another thing that happens though is that the other person, let's say it's the spouse, is okay. You've been thinking about this conflict, you know.
The guy is clueless.
And the guy's clueless because you've been thinking about this, and you know you have this conflict, and you know you need to deal with it, and you plan out exactly how you're going to, and you're cool, you're calm, you're in control, and you're going to be an owl, and everything's going to be fine, and you expect the same thing from them, that they're going to be nice and cool, calm, and under control, and they don't know that anything's wrong.
And then men get triggered.
Yeah.
And once men are triggered, then you're triggered, and pretty
right.
soon you're...
It degenerates from there.
Tom, do you...
Okay, and then I'll come back to you. Go ahead.
Do you think that there's some
the person's style is situational, and you think there is something that would go across situations. For example, I'm a far different profession than I am personally in my conflict style, and you found that to be true, or is that the exception?
I think that there are components and expectations within careers that demand you handle things certain ways. And when you're out of those situations, I think, yes, you can be different. I think that there's residual, though. If, let's say, you are expected to handle a conflict a certain way, and you handle a certain way, even though you don't want to, then you might go home and kick the dog. Does that make sense? Or whatever kicking the dog metaphor is equivalent of. Because you can't separate the conflict you're having and say, well, that's only a work thing. So I think that you can be situational, but I think conflict still affects us pretty much the same way. I'm going to go up here first and then down there.
Okay, the conflict resolution comes through empowerment. We can be contributors to the other person's sense of empowerment, and through that contribution then it tends to work through conciliation with the person as we empower each other. Is that it?
And that's best case scenario, folks. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that, you know, tomorrow you're going to get into a conflict and, you know, an hour later have great awareness and then immediately be able to go back to that person and say, da 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 da. I had a little conflict this morning in dish team with another person, and it was just sort of like I was kind of caught by surprise. And after it was all over, you know, and my amygdala fired a little bit, and I'm just like, nah, you know, I can sort of not, I don't have to go that personal on it. And so I just sort of kind of laughed it off, and I kept sort of being the person that I try to be all the time, you know, stay in your homeostasis. But later I went and I talked to the person about the whole situation, and it was a good talk, but it still doesn't feel like we made some sort of glorious resolution. Does that help? You know, we didn't hug or even shake hands after that.
I'm just thinking long-term relationship.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that empowerment and recognition works. We utilize this orientation to conflict at our center with our employees, and we sit down, and sometimes we do mediation between our employees. You know, I'll act as a mediator between two employees, of both of which I care dearly about, but I act as a neutral. Now, I don't know if you can find those opportunities. If you cannot act as a mediator in your own conflict. Absolutely. And if you ever want to tick somebody off, try to act like a mediator in your own conflict. It doesn't work. It really is one of the hardest things in the world to do. Because... when you come out, you know, the last thing in the world you want to say to the other person is, you know, you've got a really good point. Or if you say it, you can say it this way. Yeah, you've got a really good point, but because you're still trying to protect yourself and you're still suspicious. And you're doing all those things. And that's one of the things that, even this morning when I went back and talked to that person, you know, I tried to do some rational things at a time when I was still a little bit shaky on my feet. And I don't know how successful it was, and, you know, that's not a... But I sort of felt like I did what I needed to do to try and be a conflict resolver. So, I don't know if I've completely missed the point, but... Your question is, or what your statement is that you can work towards it?
Well, and you said that you bring people to awareness and empowerment, and this is the core of your helping in the conflicted situation.
Yeah.
So if we long-term work toward empowerment and helping with empowerment, this is our goal, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in organization, it's really strange how that empowerment happens. We work with empowerment with organizations, and this stuff comes from Blanchard, who's kind of one of the gurus. He did the One Minute Manager and all those other things. He has a book out now that says, empowerment takes more than a minute. You know, because it's not something you can do in a minute. It's an ongoing identification of what you need to do to empower organizations and peoples. One of the first things he says is that in order to have an empowered organization, you have to share information with everybody. Well, the minute I go in and say to the boss who's hired me to solve a conflict or to raise the empowerment level, as you need to start sharing information with everybody, he's like, so long.
Yeah.
You know, because that's about, it's about his power. Has anybody seen the book, Who Moved My Cheese? Who Moved My Cheese? It's an awesome book. It's 94 pages long. It's like a number one bestseller on the New York bestseller list. And it's all about four different subjects in a cheese maze. Sniff, scurry, him, and haw. Him and haw are people. Sniff and scurry are mice. And it's all about the travels of people, and we all have those components. Sometimes we sniff and scurry after the change is coming about and we're ready to move off in the next direction. And sometimes we sit there and hem and haw and never able to move. So it all sort of connects in that realm of how do we handle change? A homeostasis is why nobody likes to change. You know? This is, you know, we've kind of self-identified who we are. I'm a trainer. And I train for organizations. Now all of a sudden somebody says, well, we can't find any more contracts for trainers. That's like my cheese. where do I need to find new cheese? I mean, one of the reasons I talked to my boss and to come out here is I said, I'll hand out my business card everywhere I go, you know, we'll find new cheese. You know, so it's all about understanding that within that homeostasis, we've got to have an acceptance that things are going to change. And I did a training one time where I went to the training and we talked empowerment and recognition and homeostasis, and the next day the group came back and they were madder than I could believe it. I mean, they were just spitting mad. And I'm like, what's going on? They had taken all of their old computers off their desk and put brand new computers on their desk and never told anybody. And the guy who was responsible for it was in the group. I spent like one whole day trying to foster empowerment and recognition because he thought he was doing a great thing. They had like 286 computers and he went up to like Pentium 2s. So, I mean, he had jumped like eons but had just made this decision and bought these computers and was going to surprise everybody. Well, he did.
He did.
So yeah, I think empowerment recognition has to start with empowerment recognition. If you teach people the language in organizations, then conflict becomes less impactful and people are able to work to resolution easier because we give people a language to talk about it. You all know this language. And that's what's weird is that we don't really understand conflict. I mean, other than saying I'm mad, I'm torqued off, I'm so mad I could spit nails, there's no real talk about what happens in conflict. And that's what I'm hoping to do.
Well, I've thought about this situation in probably both of the sessions that I've had with you already. This is real life, it really happened. And it's all about homeostasis and power and empowerment and recognition. In Portland, Oregon, there was a time where there was road rage so that guys got out of their cars and they beat each other with a baseball bat, okay? And so that was in the news and caused serious injury. And so I'm out in my son's car getting something out of the car and I see a baseball bat in the car. And so, by the way, my son is Stan over Narnia, okay? Anyway, you can tell him so. And so I thought, it wasn't even baseball season. And I thought, what in the heck? And so I
Stan doesn't play baseball.
Well, no, he actually didn't. And I went to Stan and said, why is this in the car? And he said, he wanted to increase his homeostasis by empowering himself and recognition of,
by carrying a baseball bat.
He put it there so that if this happened, he would have the bat. And I thought, oh my gosh. So I called his best friend's mom and said, check his car for the best friend. See, sure enough, he had a baseball bat in his car too. And I thought, so I had this talk conversation with Stan about this woman.
A great example of a homeostasis of an entire city that is pretty conflictual and sort of sets up this norm for if someone's going to screw with me, I'm going to screw with them. If somebody's going to play around with me, if somebody's going to threaten me, I'm going to threaten them. And the whole city, homeostasis drops into a more conflictual area because of one report of somebody beating
Yeah, I would never guess
Right.
That he would have taken it that way.
And I don't know if you've ever seen Stan, but he's the one that, like, he's the Pied Piper of kids. I mean, 20 or 30 kids follow him around the village. He's loved by every child, so it's kind of out of context, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it true in general that if you build up that power and recognition hill by giving people information that when a change happens, they don't have to come so far out there?
Exactly. Yeah. People support what they help create. We've got a little concept. Does anybody know where the word sabotage came from?
Dutch shoes threw their wooden sabot shoes into the machinery to stop it up.
Yep, sabot, S-A-B-O-T. Sabot was a wooden shoe within the Industrial Revolution. People weren't given a break. And so when people weren't given a break, one of the guys would just drop his shoe into the machinery and gum it up. Sabotage, A-G-E. We believe that from sort of idea to implementation, there's kind of a finite thing. And if you involve people in sort of creating this and then you do the decision, then I know I can't spell and you guys know it too. So if you sort of have input along a certain level and then you make a decision that your implementation is a certain length. Now, if you have a longer input, then your implementation takes less time. Okay, does that make sense? So you make a decision and your implementation is actually shorter because people support what they help create. The exception to this rule is if an organization says, we're gonna do this, but we're just gonna ask them and then we don't really care what they say, but we're gonna do it anyway. And sometimes that happens in organizations. And then what happens is that this whole input and then the decision comes way out, or the actual implementation and the final comes way out here because people struggle through that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think people fight for that power, Tim. And I was thinking about, you know, related to your kids, and when they feel powerless, that's when they're going to throw a temper tantrum or, you know, do all the things that they do to seek that power. And just like, you know, in the organization, the people being giving their input and not being heard are going to, you know, start resorting to lawsuits or demonstrations or whatever to seek the power because that they're not getting.
That's right. I work at the United States Postal Service as a mediator, and they have 152,000 mediation, 152,000 EEO complaints per year. 152,000. It is their main way of responding to any kind of conflict. And there used to be a lot of killings. I mean, going postal has become kind of a terminology. You know, it was funny though, when they started happening at schools, no one called it going school. You know, there was no connection. Postal seemed a lot easier. But the response from the United States Postal Service was that, like, now within 72 hours, they have a mediation scheduled for that conflict, and they found it to be an effective cost-saving thing because it's similar to this. You know, somebody files, and then they just have this. The average EEO complaint was over 3 years long.
Oh,
yeah, cost of Postal Service on average $300,000 per case that actually went to court.
Well, I guess what we would hope is that there would be a process that they're not even those complaints. By the time it's getting to complaint, someone's really upset.
Well, and that's what they're hoping for, and what they utilize this theory that we teach, which I've been working on all week, and the true name of this theory is called transformative orientation to mediation, or transformative orientation to conflict. And what they say is that they're finding, they call it upstream's effect. In other words, if people feel that they are being able to be heard, then they go back into their work environments and say, you know, I've been able to get some satisfaction. Because oftentimes people don't want monetary rewards, they want substantive help. They want the procedures changed. They want the way they're being treated to change. They're not interested in a lot of money. They just want something to change. I did a very high-level mediation in the Postal Service, and it was between, like, major players in the U.S. Postal Service, and they both had counsel. Both had lawyers in the room, which is always a freaky thing for me. You know, I'm like, I only have a master's degree. But they were pretty good, and then they would start talking to each other, and all of a sudden one of the lawyers said, you know, we've been in 28 of these cases, and we've settled everyone, and we'd like to move towards an agreement. And, you know, I'm a mediator. I'm a neutral. It doesn't make any difference to me. I said, well, you know, how do the parties feel? The party said, okay, that's fine. So they'd work towards an agreement, and they would just start having to churn out all this language because they didn't trust each other. And the document got longer and more kind of gross and just wordy. And then all of a sudden, one of them would say, wait a minute. You know, when I said this to you, I want to tell you about why I said that. You know, and then they would start doing empowerment and recognition. And then I would foster that again. This would go on for like a half an hour, 45 minutes. All of a sudden, one of the lawyers would say, our party is, we've settled in 28 of these cases. We'd like to settle again. You know, we'd like to move towards settlement. They moved back into settlement. This time, the language got a little bit cleaner. You know, didn't quite need as many words because there was more trust. All of a sudden, one of the parties said to me, you know, that comment I made to you about this, I want to talk more about that. Blah, blah, blah. They go back, and I continue to foster empowerment and recognition. In the end, 4 hours and 50 minutes later, we had a three-sentence agreement. Three sentences about what one would do and what the other one would do and where one would go and what would happen to the other one. Three sentences. I mean, and they're like, this is great, you know? And you know what the best part was that they sort of looked at me after this was all over, and I was just like shocked. I mean, I really worked hard doing this, paraphrasing and all those other things. And they're like, well, you know, this must have been pretty easy for you. Because when you do mediation and you do it well, people don't even know that you're really involved in it because you're completely sort of outside of the process. And I think that's what's nice about this orientation to mediation is that it's not about, okay, now you tell your story. That's the first step. Okay, now let's generate options. Okay, now let's evaluate the options. Okay, now let's choose the options and let's write the agreement. Because that used to be the kind of the model of mediation. So, pretty new orientation. But our sense is that it works much better for parties. Because we used to get in mediations where all of a sudden it would just work. I mean, it was just like the... You know, we knew there was something that happened every once in a while in mediations, and it was just like, and we could never quite figure it out till we sort of came upon this theory, and it really does make a difference. It hasn't been tried a lot in schools. I know, Dave, you're working in schools, right? Probably with a problem solving or a step model. And I did work in schools utilizing a step model, and oftentimes, probably more than 80% of the time, the ultimate agreement that they came to was that they just wouldn't even talk to each other anymore. They would just avoid each other. And that was sort of the common sort of standoff that they came to, which was not a really quality agreement. But I think that this orientation probably can work in schools, although it's pretty new.
Well, there's a session on that on Friday, but that the biggest thing in schools they fall into help with conflict is climate, the climate of the school, and which is right what you're talking about, the climate relationships are present within the mediation. Mm-hmm. By empowering and recognizing people's needs, and that's the same thing in schools, although they haven't quite gotten that far yet.
Yeah, they haven't quite gotten that far, and in schools, oftentimes we get calls from schools and organizations that like, okay, we have this problem, can you come in and fix it? And we usually just say no. You know, businesses want to know, can you do it in 1 hour? I mean, that's their orientation. We're way over our time. The bell's going to ring in a couple of minutes. Thanks for coming. Yeah, let's get our pencils back.